Absolutely. So mindfulness is especially critical in, I think, the modern day when there is just a lot of mental clutter. There are a lot of different things going on all at the same time, especially if you're a busy mom with kids that are pulling for your attention. And another way of thinking about mindfulness is that it allows you to allocate or distribute your attention in ways that are beneficial to you.
I'm Amy.
And I'm Abby. And as women, we are constantly comparing ourselves to others. But your life isn't supposed to look like hers. Being your best self means standing firm in your decisions and always being willing to grow with a purpose.
We get vulnerable and real with an honest look into the challenges and triumphs we all face. Every woman listening gets the opportunity to choose what life looks like for herself.
Today's conversation is with Gloria Hahn, and she's a clinical psychologist, but today's entire conversation is about mindfulness. And Amy and I learned so much about this, how simple it can be, but also that it's not easy. However, there's a lot of places that we can just plug it into our day to be more present, be more happy, and just really get a lot more enjoyment out of this life, not only for us, but also for our kids. She talks about different types of strategies that we can start doing, as well as ones that we can do with our children. So with that, let's get into our interview with Gloria Hahn.
Gloria, as a clinical psychologist and researcher, you have experience with many different approaches in therapy and tools that you can use with your patients to enhance their lives. Why are you so passionate about your work and research with mindfulness in particular?
Yes. So mindfulness is the practice of paying attention to the present moment on purpose while letting go of judgment. And what I've learned over the years in delivering psychological interventions that might not explicitly involve mindfulness, like cognitive behavioral therapy and other related interventions, is that the gateway to any sort of effective action that we take in our lives actually requires mindfulness. So we need to have awareness of what's going on in our surroundings, what's going on in our minds. What are our action urges? What are the things that we want to be doing in this moment? And then we make a decision on how we want to respond to a situation. And so, in my opinion, mindfulness really is the primary skill or set of skills that is needed in order to live lives that are in line with our values that get us closer to our goals.
It's really interesting that you defined it that way right from the start, because like we were talking about before the interview, we're talking to a lot of really busy women right now. They have full lives, careers, kids. And I think when they think of mindfulness, they might think of meditating in an undisturbed setting, and that's what they think of. So can you kind of talk about, because you were saying like basically it happens or it could happen all day long.
Yes. It can be a daily practice. It could be a moment-to-moment practice, and it can be a way that we describe the way that we're going about our lives. So there is definitely a relationship between mindfulness and meditation. Meditation comes from Eastern religion traditions, and so there are forms of meditation that are very specific to the historical background and even the cultural background of the practice of meditation. And mindfulness is a way of kind of taking in the active ingredients of meditation and what we know to be beneficial about meditation and applying it to daily life. So it's not necessarily tied to a religious practice or even a cultural practice. It's really just a way of going about our day, participating in our daily activities that enhances the way that we experience those activities.
I'm like already learning so much just from talking with you these last couple of minutes here. I have an Apple Watch, and at 7 o'clock every morning, it gives me a little ding saying, be mindful. And in that moment, I'm like, I'm about to get the kids on a school bus. I have 2 minutes to get them out the door. Like somebody doesn't have shoes on. I can't be mindful right now. But even just what you're saying right now, just redirecting and having that concentration be on that moment instead of being so frazzled, I feel like it could have a lot of benefits. So let's talk about the benefits for a little bit here, because I think a lot of people listening, they want to be mindful. Amy even said it. They're very very, very busy. But what are some of the mental benefits that come from being more mindful and having mindfulness as part of our lives?
Absolutely. So mindfulness is especially critical in, I think, the modern day when there is just a lot of mental clutter. There are a lot of different things going on all at the same time, especially if you're a busy mom with kids that are pulling for your attention. And another way of thinking about mindfulness is that it allows you to allocate or distribute your attention in ways that are beneficial to you. So with that said, when we are feeling very overwhelmed, where there's a lot of mental chatter, we are automatically stressed and we're not really able to be fully present and at our best. So one of the biggest benefits of mindfulness is this ability to train our attention to either be very focused on the activity that we're working on or being present with what we are doing in the moment, or to be able to shift our attention away from things that might be causing stress or, I know it sounds like a very severe word, but suffering. I would say that when we experience stress and pain on a day-to-day moment, we are actually in a form of suffering or emotion dysregulation. So as far as mental health benefits, it helps with regulating our emotions, not being as reactive. It gives us the ability to pause a little bit and respond to the moment in a way that is in line with our values that we can look back on and say, yeah, I was like really proud of the way that I responded in that stressful moment. And there's also research that shows that it helps things like working memory, our ability to juggle a lot of information all at the same time, and also disengage from a lot of the thoughts that we have that kind of pull for our attention, you know, based on our life experiences. And let's say we're a perfectionistic mom, or we are feeling a little bit more anxiety in a given moment because of a big meeting that we have coming up. It really allows us to shift our attention effectively so that we can use our limited mental resources in a way that is more efficient and fitting for what our goals are in the moment.
That was a really interesting answer. To Abby's point, sometimes when my Apple Watch tells me to take a deep breath, I want to chuck it across the room because like it just says that at a time that feels very overwhelming to me. And I think that's why it's saying it. And just this idea that we do have more of a choice of what to spend our attention on. And in this phase of life with a lot of things pulling at our attention, it feels good to feel like we have a choice. Now, we also, when we were researching you, we found out that there are some physical benefits as well. So we were hoping you would talk about those.
Yes. So over the course of years and in modern medicine, we really know that the mind is not so separate from the body as we once thought it was. So we might have thought that, you know, physical health conditions are separate from mental health conditions, but they are really inextricably linked. And so there is a strong connection between the mind and the body. When we think about physical health, it really relies on our nervous system and our ability to regulate our nervous system, because our nervous system is part of all different aspects of our body and physical well-being. So when we are being mindful, we can strengthen this sense of control and balance, this communication between our mind and our body. A lot of physical health conditions might relate to chronic stress or habitual things that are actually causing those chronic health conditions. So mindfulness in particular has a very positive impact on reducing the negative aspects of chronic health conditions like chronic pain. There's also research to show that it can improve cardiovascular health and other systems of the body that are very related to different physical health conditions.
Okay. I'm like thinking about this with my Hashimoto's diagnosis and just how many things could be helped if I focused more on being mindful. I think of my... Maybe that's how it all started, right? Like there's so many pieces that can go into that. So even just as you mentioned, some of those with chronic pain or, you know, different issues that we're having, I think a lot of people in our audience right now, they're going through health struggles, or maybe their health isn't the same as it was before they had kids, or they're hoping to be healthier in a million different ways. And just maybe if we can try being more mindful, maybe it's not the number one thing that will change everything, but could it help? Probably. And I know right away at the beginning in your first answer, you mentioned judgment and how, you know, pulling yourself to the present moment without judgment. So how does this have to do with mindfulness? Like, is it ever okay to judge a situation? Could it be like good sometimes, bad other times? Tell us more about this.
I love this question. So oftentimes when I tell patients or colleagues or friends about this concept of being non-judgmental, there's a little bit of resistance there because our judgments actually do help us out a lot in life. We can think of our brains as a learning machine and also a machine that's trying to help us by coming up with effective shortcuts, right? So judgments are actually a type of shortcut. They help us decipher, you know, what's good and bad, what's better or worse, what's right or wrong. Those types of evaluative judgments where we're evaluating something as being good or bad can sometimes get in the way of helping us see the full picture. So judgments sometimes make it so that we narrow our focus and we become a little bit more closed-minded. And so when I talk about being non-judgmental in the mindfulness context, what I mean is really grounding us to the observable facts of a situation. It doesn't mean that we can't sometimes use our judging mind in a beneficial way. So the types of judgments that I think are actually still helpful for us are ones that have to do with discernment. Like, is this in line with my values? Is this not in line with my values? We certainly don't want to be rid of our gut feeling of if this is the right thing for me in this moment, because mindfulness actually is designed to help us live in more alignment and more accordance with our values. And we also don't want to get rid of judgments that are in the form of preferences. Like, it's okay to still like one thing more than you like another thing, because that's what makes us who we are. It makes us unique people. So preferences, discernment, those are the types of judgments that I actually think are really beneficial and that we can cultivate in our lives. But judgments that make us feel more closed off or make us feel that this is right, that was wrong, I shouldn't have done that, where maybe we're judging ourselves or being critical of ourselves and others, those are the ones that often get us in trouble. And one more thing, when we judge what should, and I put that in air quotes because I often tell my patients that we shouldn't should on ourselves, right? We're imposing a right or wrong way of doing things that might not be helpful to us. When we judge what should be happening in our bodies, that can often lead to this conflict between us and our physical bodies. And that makes it even more stressful when we are experiencing a chronic health condition or when we're experiencing chronic pain or ailments like that.
That answer made a lot of sense to me, the way that you broke down, because, you know, as humans, obviously we have our preferences and things that come to our mind right away. But then especially because we're talking to a group of women, Abby and I have been talking about this idea of like, sometimes have we ignored our body for so long that that's what created the issue? Like, I really rely on working out to manage my stress. And that, I think I overused that one and that led to some issues. So it's like, sometimes when it was telling me I was so tired, maybe I should have listened to that.
Yeah. And you'll hear a lot about people in the wellness space or mindfulness space talk about tuning in or listening to your bodies. And I think that is a really critical part of moving our bodies and working out in a way that really serves our needs, where it helps us find more balance between what our minds need, what our bodies need, and how we can function better in our lives. I think when we go to the gym and we are almost dissociating from reality by just hitting it out, by running it out, or tuning it out with, you know, loud music and a really deep sweat sesh, if we don't take that moment to actually think about and tune into what our body is feeling, what is it needing? What are my urges in this moment? Does this feel good to me? Which is a judgment, by the way, a good one. Then we actually cannot experience the workout fully. And when we don't experience the workout fully, we're not getting the maximum benefit from the workout.
It's so interesting.
Let's take a quick break from this episode to bring up one of our longest-standing partners, BetterHelp. BetterHelp has helped both Amy and I through some really, really hard seasons, but then also some seasons where we just needed a little extra boost. You know, the ones where you can't do things on your own and your friends aren't offering the support that you need, so you want to talk to an outside source. BetterHelp is awesome for that. I have had several therapists at this point. They have all been excellent. However, if you don't find that you match with the very first one, you can easily just ask for a replacement and you can get replaced within 24 hours. That's what I love about BetterHelp is that it's so convenient. Not only can you be placed with a therapist within a day or two, but you also can reach out to your therapist through the chat feature, through phone calls, through video conferencing, wherever you need it most. So if you go to BetterHelp.com/herself, you do save 10% on your first month. Again, that's BetterHelp, BetterHelp.com/herself to save 10% on your first month. Okay, back to our show.
Okay, now we want to break this down a little more because what we learned from you is that there are three skills involved in mindfulness. So what are these, and is there any one of them that is more critical than the others for well-being?
So all of these skills work in tandem, and the three skills are to observe what's going on in the moment. Observing means tuning into your senses. So we observe through our senses. We can see the world around us. We can hear what's going on. We can feel our surroundings. We can taste the food that we're eating, or even just taste the taste of our mouth without even having any food in it. And so when we're tuning into our senses, we are taking in information from our environment. That is the first step to really being able to be mindful, is like allowing our minds to go there and actually noticing what's happening. So observing is basically noticing what's happening. Then the second skill is describing. So we put meaning to the things that we are noticing and observing. We use words typically to describe what's going on. So I'm looking ahead at a painting on the wall and I say, I can see a green painting and there's white splotches on it. That's bringing words to describing the things that I'm observing. Oftentimes, observing and describing go hand in hand and are kind of in tandem, because it's really hard to observe something without our brain naturally describing what that thing is. And then the third skill is participating. Participating means diving into the moment and just being fully immersed in the moment while letting go of judgment. So some of the things that I like to think about with participating are when you're playing a sport, let's say, if you're preoccupied with what you're going to have for dinner or what's on your to-do list, you're not going to be as effective in just fully embodying that sport in that very moment. Same with when we are with our pets or when we're with our children. There are times when maybe we are really preoccupied and we're not actually fully participating in the conversation with our kids about what went on at school or if they like peas versus carrots. And we kind of tune out some of this information. But participating is like turning on your eyes and ears fully, leaning in and being fully present in the moment. Getting into that flow state. I think we've all felt it when we were in that state, but it can be helpful to know that doing that and embodying that state of being is actually an act of mindfulness.
And are you supposed to do that all the time? Like, I'm just thinking about how much energy it would take to be that on with our kids all the time. So just a question about that.
I would say that it has to be effective. So mindfulness skills are only working if they are effective and working given the situation that you're in. So sometimes, as you're pointing out, it's not actually effective to just only be tuning into this one thing. You know, there's a reason why we're often juggling different information, lots of different information sources at one time, so that we can do our jobs that sometimes require this sense of holding information in one place and then doing one thing at the same time. But for me, it's when we are going about our day and you notice, you have this observation that you're kind of an autopilot, then you can make a decision to say, well, I'm going to fully participate in this moment. It could be 30 seconds or even less, where maybe you really notice the eyelashes on your child, or the way that they're smiling, or their freckles, or something like that. That is a gateway into participating fully in the moment. And all of a sudden, you feel more present with your child or with the person that you're with.
Amy and I both have smiles on our faces right now. I think that every listener of ours can think about that time where they did focus in on the eyelashes or the freckles or the giggle or that moment. And it can feel so good. But I also think that as parents, so much of the time, I'm glad you answered exactly that way of it can be just 30 seconds. Because I think so many of us, we put pressure on ourselves to be like, you have to be present every moment, like make sure not to take this for granted. And that's not the case. Like that's not what we're talking about in this episode. We're talking about being more mindful in certain moments. And being able to, yeah, use those three skills to really hone in. Because so much of our audience right now, they want to be more mindful, but they'll go for a walk with a podcast in. I mean, right now you might be going on a walk right now and this podcast is in your ears. Maybe they're trying to sit outside and they're enjoying the weather, but they're also scrolling on Instagram. So why is it so much easier for us to distract ourselves instead of leaning into this whole idea of mindfulness?
One of the things that comes to mind with why it's so easy to distract ourselves is because we just live in this modern world. There's technology. There is just so much stimulation going on from coming into our senses from all different directions. And with how quickly information gets transmitted these days with technology, with social media, and how quickly it is to just get a text message and then be pulled away from the thing that we're doing, we are really competing. All these different sources of attention are really competing for our attention. So it makes sense that the brain is kind of like, well, I can't handle all this clutter. I can't handle all this information. So I'm just going to quickly jump from one thing to another. And then the other reason why I think it's so much more easy to distract ourselves from being present and in the moment is because being with ourselves, with our thoughts, with our emotions, with our sensations, is really challenging and it can be really painful. And I don't mean that necessarily even in the sense of chronic pain or something that rises to the level of like a clinical level of pain, but actually sitting with ourselves is uncomfortable. And that discomfort makes us want to avoid that moment of being present at all costs. It's almost like our body and our mind's natural defense mechanism to not feeling overwhelmed, but then our gut reaction or our instinct to try to avoid that discomfort is actually maintaining that discomfort over time. So what I mean by that is, let's say we are feeling sadness and it's not easy to sit with that sadness, but no emotions are bad, right? And so if we distract ourselves from that sadness, it might quell our sense of discomfort in the moment, but it's not actually going to allow us to process and metabolize the thing that is causing the sadness or even just that moment of sadness in and of itself. Whereas if we are mindful and we say, I'm noticing, using our observe and describe skills, I'm noticing that I'm feeling somewhat sad right now and I'm feeling this weight in my chest. It actually gives us a moment to process and metabolize that sadness so that we can then move on in a more regulated way.
That makes sense to me. Abby and I have talked about before the idea of buffering. And then also, I think we've just gotten into habits now. Like if your phone's next to you, you pick it up and you look at it. So like if you want to get out of that habit, that is going to be a change. What you mentioned there at the end too, I think I told this on another episode, but there was this week where I just felt like I was on the verge of tears all week. And I told Abby, I'm like, I just feel like I'm going to cry. And then I just did cry and it felt good to process that emotion. And I was like, why did I spend 3 days like trying to hold those tears in when it felt like they needed to come out? So I think we've done a really good job of kind of ignoring sometimes that feeling, and we have plenty of ways to help us ignore it now. So sometimes we do it for too long. And now a quick break from our sponsor, Chomps. Chomps is a kefir family favorite. I am telling you, our children and Drew and I absolutely love these beef sticks. They are excellent because They are packed with protein while not having any sugar. They're also allergy friendly and they don't have any fillers. So these are a snack that we can stand behind and feel really good about giving our kids and ourselves. As far as the kids, their favorite flavor is original beef. Mine is jalapeno beef. I like the little spice in my snack. I pair it with a fruit and it's just awesome to keep me going. So if you guys are interested in trying Chomps, you can go to chomps.com for 20% off with code HERSELF. That's Chomps, C-H-O-M-P-S.com for 20% off with code HERSELF. We heard you talk on the Brain Time Machine about how inevitably our minds also really like to go to the future or to the past. And we know that it is important and helpful to keep our minds in the present moment. So we wanted you to talk about the downsides of focusing too much on our future or too much on our past.
A lot of the research in psychology when it comes to mental health, I think, can really be boiled down to this concept of the brain time machine. And so our brains are constantly trying to protect us. It's constantly trying to take in information and mobilize us for the future. We often try to prepare for the future by thinking ahead to, well, if this happens, then I will do this. Or what if this happens? When we get into a pattern of thinking a lot about the future and the what if thoughts, then we start to get into a pattern of thinking that actually is really leading us to anxiety. It's not a bad thing, of course, to plan ahead. But if that becomes our default mode, where we're constantly thinking about, well, what's going to happen next? What's going to happen next? What if this happens? That pattern of thinking, sometimes we call it catastrophizing or forecasting. It's really paired with our experience of anxiety. So anxiety is when our brain is constantly trying to time travel into the future. And then the converse of that, when we think about events in the past that maybe were really painful or didn't go our way, or when we have regrets about things that have already happened, and we just can't seem to disengage from that thing that, oh, I wish I hadn't had done that. That was so embarrassing when I said that thing. Or, oh gosh, like this random memory from third grade comes up and I just can't let it go. That's when our brain is time traveling to the past. And we know from a lot of research that when our brain develops this tendency to think about past events in the form of regrets or judging ourselves for things that we've done in the past or that we've experienced in the past, that actually leads us to more of a depressive state. So we are kind of held back in things that we actually cannot change. And that, again, ramps up our sense of suffering in the moment because we're not putting ourselves in a situation where we can move forward. And so then we feel stuck in the past. So mindfulness really helps us kind of stop the brain time machine and bring ourselves to the present. We look out the window and we notice with our senses, what are we experiencing in this moment? We allow ourselves to have that moment and we just fully allow ourselves to participate in what's going on around us.
Well, I think everyone listening, I know this has happened even just this week where you can see yourself in the future and trying to plan ahead. And we have a sick kid at home right now. So it's like planning tomorrow and then maybe the next day and then maybe the next day. But then also thinking to all the experiences of the last few days, it's just like you can go forward and backwards and forward and backwards. And I could see how that turmoil can turn into anxiety and depression. And also how so many of our listeners being mothers, now it makes sense. Like it does make sense. But this entire episode, I just feel like it's giving so much inspiration to just try to pull to the present right now and to help a lot of these things that are just feeling really heavy for a lot of our listeners.
And one of the ways that can, where you can apply a mindfulness skill in that moment where, you know, you have a sick kid at home and you start to worry about, are they going to be okay? Or is this going to change all the other things that I had planned today? Or what if this happens and I can't make it to that thing? You can say to yourself, I'm noticing that I'm having a worry thought, or I'm noticing that my brain is in the future time machine. That in and of itself is a moment of mindfulness because you are observing and describing what's happening in your brain at that very moment. And when you give yourself that moment to just describe that, you're then able to respond in a way with more awareness and with more of a deliberate kind of stance into what's going on. So I just want to say that because that's what I mean by everyday mindfulness, where that could be a mindful moment. And you'll notice, and even if you're listening right now, and this is like a scenario that's really relevant to you, if you just say to yourself, I'm noticing that I have the thought that I'm worried about this, or I'm having a worry thought, or I'm having a thought that is prompting sadness, I'd be curious to know how that automatically starts to kind of alleviate some of the stress and allows you to just be with that thought or with that emotion, and how that might relieve discomfort and suffering.
I think it's a good homework assignment for everyone listening. I mean, even right now, every time my phone dings, I'm thinking that it's my mother-in-law saying something is going on with our son right now. And so every time I'm looking down, I'm like, oh, wait, okay, it's just an email that came in. But that thought is in my mind. So just being like, okay, I know that this is happening. I'm aware this is happening. It kind of alleviate a little bit of that. Speaking of motherhood, right now you work with a lot of young people and kids. So what kind of results have you seen from using mindfulness as a treatment or a tool with children specifically? Like, how do you use it? What are some of the outcomes? Because I know that our mothers listening are really interested in this.
Yes. So I primarily work with kids with chronic pain. So I'm a pediatric pain psychologist. And I, that's how kids come to see me, is if they have a chronic pain condition. And one of the most interesting things about pain that is related to mindfulness is that often what maintains the pain when it's chronic is fear of pain. So We become really worried about the pain itself, and we do everything that we can do to try to avoid the pain or try to numb out the pain. And when we do that, we know that that actually keeps us in this pain cycle. So one of the biggest things that we teach kids is how to actually allow these sensations and teach our brains that these sensations are responses of the nervous system. The nervous system is being a little bit overprotective because pain is not a very pleasant experience. And when we reduce the fear of pain or the threat associated with the pain, we can actually start to alleviate the pain itself. So in this clinical setting, what we might do, I often work with a physical therapist, occupational therapist, and pain physician, will help to prompt different mindfulness exercises that promote relaxation of the nervous system or just awareness of the senses. For kids, one of the favorite tools that I love to use is diaphragmatic breathing. Breathing is just one way of kind of getting into a mindful state, but we tend to breathe from our chest and have a pretty shallow, intense breath. And so with kids, we teach them how to breathe from their diaphragm. And you can say, breathe in as if you're smelling a chocolate cake, and then breathe out as if you're 100 years old and you're blowing out all the candles. You want to see the belly expand, and then you really want to see the belly button go back in towards the spine. So that is one way to just help them ground themselves in the moment if you start to notice that the child is feeling dysregulated. Another one is to tune into the senses. And so sometimes we call this the mindful fives, or this tuning into your senses, where you notice five things that you can see, four things that you can hear, three things that you can touch, two things that you can smell, and one thing that you can taste. And what that's doing is actually getting the child into the observe and describe skills, because they're tuning in the world around them through their senses, and they're describing it with their words. And then lastly, the next one is just encouraging them to label their emotions or label their thoughts. This is really hard, even for adults. So it can be really hard for children too. Emotions are kind of this weird concept. Bringing out a feelings wheel or starting to build their emotion vocabulary is really helpful. And so let's say the child is feeling really angry. If they can say, I am noticing that I'm feeling really angry right now, or I'm feeling angry right now, that's a moment of mindfulness. And it's going to be the gateway to helping them regulate that emotion, process and regulate that emotion.
Yeah, I love some of the stuff you described. I feel like kids hopefully are learning it more in school now too. Like, we notice that they come home, they have these like star breathing pattern that they've learned for when they're frustrated. So I love that it's getting more attention. As parents that are interested in fostering mindfulness, do you have any more tips on how we can do this in our kids?
So one of the biggest strategies with building these positive interactions between parent or caregiver and child is really parent modeling and mirroring. So when the child sees that mom might be stressed, but you explicitly say, I'm feeling stressed right now, so I'm going to take 3 belly breaths, and you just do that. Naturally, they're going to see that that is a strategy that mom, their MVP, their all-star, is actually doing, and they're going to be more likely to use that skill as well. And then also reflecting back to the child what you're noticing. I'm noticing that your fists are really tense, or I'm noticing that your body feels really tense. Can you tell me how you're feeling right now? And that gives them a moment of having to observe and then describe to you how they're feeling. And so in that moment, they're actually being really mindful of their thoughts and mindful of their emotions. So that you're cultivating the mindfulness skill right there.
I love that you shared that first one, because what came to my mind is I know a lot of women, and maybe a lot of the women that we were raised by, it's just kind of the knee jerk to be like, I'm fine, I'm okay. Instead of saying like, I feel angry right now, or being honest. And because like, if your whole body is showing you're angry and you're saying, I'm fine, it just doesn't make sense to them. So I love that you pointed out, like, we are allowed to be humans and to name our feelings as well. And that's going to be helpful to them too.
Yeah. And I love the word allowing, because mindfulness really is a practice of allowing what's going on to happen. And a lot of times, unintentionally, we end up teaching our kids that it's not okay to have certain emotions, or it's not okay to have certain thoughts. The reality is that emotions are really automatic. They are prompted by something, but whatever is happening for the child is just happening in that moment. And when we start to accidentally teach them that it's not okay to feel certain things or think certain things, it actually creates that sense of judgment. We say, oh, that's wrong, or that's bad. But instead, if we help them build awareness for what they're feeling, what they're thinking, that actually helps them regulate their emotions a lot better, and makes it so that in the course of their lives, they're not going to be as likely to judge themselves for having a reaction or having a response to something. Because I think that we have a lot of really valuable intuition in us, and we want to be curious. We want to explore that and then make a decision for if we want to act on those thoughts and feelings, or if we don't want to.
Well, Gloria, even as you were saying that, it's the whole point of mindfulness to bring yourself to the present moment. So if you're saying, I'm fine, and trying to get onto the next moment, you're just completely negating the fact that we're trying to be more mindful of what's going on right now in this moment, how we feel. So I think that all of our listeners, Amy and I included right now, we want to be more mindful, but we're trying to figure out how do we actually pull this into our day. So let's say we have an extra 5 or 10 minutes. Maybe it's after we drop our kids off at school, when our baby goes down for a nap, maybe when we're winding down after we put the kids to bed. How can we use these small periods of time to really maximize the benefits of mindfulness?
So I think of activities like having a warm cup of tea, or lighting your favorite candle, you know, in those moments when you're just able to be by yourself, and really noticing the scent, and maybe noticing something different about the candle, like, oh, it started to melt unevenly. Interesting, right? That's a moment of mindfulness. And it just, when we bring curiosity into these moments, it opens up our attention in a way where we're like, oh, I never noticed that before. Our brain really likes that sense of novelty and openness. It helps us feel like we are being a lot more present. So moments like that, where you are doing the activity that feels calming to you, and you're just noticing through your senses the full spectrum of what that experience means to you, is a way to kind of easily incorporate it. Mindful walking is also a great practice. So when you're on a walk, noticing what the leaves look like in the trees, or closing your eyes and noticing what the breeze feels like against your face, and really smelling what the air smells like. We kind of take these things for granted. Of course, we're always breathing. We're always having our eyes opened when we're walking, but we're not really paying attention, and we're not really participating in that moment. If anyone has pets, I think that being with your pets and just like really noticing what their ears feel like as you're, you know, stroking them, that is also a moment of mindfulness, and it feels very regulating. And then also some of the strategies that we've already talked about before, we're just adding something like, I'm having the thought that, and then saying out loud what your brain is thinking, the string of words that your brain is naturally constructing. that allows you to be mindful of your thoughts in a way that then brings insight and awareness to the moment. And then you have more clarity on how you might want to respond to the mental chatter going on in your brain.
We've loved this whole conversation, Gloria. So thank you so much for being on. And also, if you would let our audience know where they could find more of you and your work.
Yes. So I can be found on Instagram at goes by glow, G-L-O. And I also have a website, GloriaTihan.com, that will be able to, where listeners will be able to find updates on the research that I've been doing and kind of what I'm working on in that realm. And then a colleague of mine, Dr. Susan Eagle, also at Vanderbilt University Medical Center, and I are writing a book called The Physician's Playbook, Coaching and Skills for Building a Fulfilling Career in Medicine. And that's because I am a psychologist in an academic medical center, and physicians and healthcare workers are a population that I think would really benefit from these types of daily mindfulness practices and skills that help us regulate our emotions and know how to build a fulfilling life and fulfilling career. So stay tuned for that. That should be coming out this season. So in April or May is where we're hoping to release this book. And we definitely want people to read it and give us feedback on how it is helping them.
As someone that worked as a nurse, I can absolutely see the need for that book. So we are excited for you. And thanks again for being on.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for being a guest on our show today. And to the Herself listeners, make sure to go follow those resources. Definitely things that can help you not only today, but for months and years to come. And if you aren't following us on Instagram, Amy and I take these conversations so much deeper Monday through Friday. So go follow us over at Herself Podcast and see all the great posts and stories that we have for you. All right, everyone, we'll talk to you next week.